All right, good morning.
It's great to be here. I'm going to do some Hebrew manuscript stuff now. And I should warn you, so nobody gets too disconcerted, there will be some Latin stuff happening as well. So if you're here for the Hebrew and you're here for that, you can just look away. I won't be offended. Okay, we're just going to ground ourselves because it's the first paper of the day. What is paleography? It's the study of ancient handwriting. And paleographers are most often asked one of four questions. Here they are, the four questions. What was written? When was it written? Where was it written? And by who? David Gantz says that paleographers are all too often regarded as repositories of authoritative dogma. Albert Delaney responded and said, paleography is an authoritarian discipline, the pertinence of which depends on the authority of the author and the faith of the reader. Now, Rachel gave me a very nice introduction there, but she didn't say the real reason I got interested in paleography was because it was to be an authoritarian figure. that's really what it's all about, isn't it? And here we've got like a traditional Latin paleographer. And what happens is you give them a document, and they look at it, and they say, ah, yes, Worcester 1016. And she says, very nice. How do we know it's Worcester 1016? They say, because that's what Worcester 1016 looks like. He said, could you give me some more clues? Yes, I spent 40 years studying Worcester 1016. All right, you have to think, is that the greatest pedagogy? That's not necessarily the pedagogic strategy that I'm promoting today. We'll have to see how this goes. Here's Albert. Oh, we've got this actually a live example of that kind of recognition. Why are you not playing my video? No.
That's Irish work.
That's basically the method. So we've all got it at home. I hope that wasn't too quick for you. Alright, so I'm just going to talk now for the next 15 minutes or so about how you do that. Alright, so we've got Albert Derrillet here. When an extremely experienced paleographer declares that a given manuscript was written in northern France in the first half of the 13th century, but fails to indicate the criteria on which this statement is based, he may be a perfect connoisseur, but he has not been an effective teacher. What is more, he unconsciously contributes to the present-day crisis of paleography as a discipline. Other people have had different crises on their minds. And they're missing a trick. This is the thing we should be paying attention to, right? All right, who's this? Come on, we're going to interrupt now. Who's this? Okay, so the three great B's of music composition. Okay, are they from the same time period?
No,
and you know that, presumably, because a number of you will have PhDs in musicology, others will have PhDs in maybe fashion design, presentation. You'll notice that Bowie's holding a microphone. Yeah, that's a kind of clue there, right? So we can do this. And if we were very good, we'd be able to work out like different periods of Bowie, right? Different decades. I used to say we all had hair like that, but mine grew back. And thank you for laughing. So you know, we can do this, right? How can we do this, right? So if I look at this now, is everyone in the room going to say, well, that's obviously English vernacular minuscule from the 11th century. Over here, we've got a marginal annotation. Also, obviously, as you can see by looking at it, right, from the 11th century. And up here, we've got clearly 13th century tremulous hand of Worcester, named because of the tremularity of the tremulous writing. All right, so this is just exposure. It's just training, right? If we can say that's Beethoven, that's Bach, and that's Bowie, we should be able to look at this in the same way, right? Just if we spend a little bit more time with that, right? I've actually been sort of promoting that method. I've got two kids. They're 7 and 4, and they spent most of their life being exposed to manuscripts and Bowie. And I'm seeing which one that they go for. And in fact, I was throwing my kid to football, sorry about the positive, the other day, and he was talking to his friend in the back of the car, driving the football, and he says, what does your father do? And he says, you know, he's an investment banker for, you know, HSBC. That's why I've got a whacking great palace of a house. And my son turned to his kid and said, but what about you not been yet? No. All right, so it's going to be a few seconds to bathe in the glory that is a 14th century Hebrew manuscript. M.R. James here. I showed this to my students yesterday. I cannot teach the art of assigning dates to manuscripts. I'm even inclined to think that it cannot be taught. At which point I said to them, well, you thought you were going to get another 7 or 8 weeks of me, but no, you know. But what James is really saying is we need to see the stuff, right? You can't just say something. You need to look at enough material. And we live in a very exciting, oh, well, let's look at some more Hebrew manuscripts. I could tell by the vibe of the audience that, you know, that's your favourite. All right, so we live in a very exciting point right now, right? As exciting, arguably, as the invention of printing press in terms of accessibility of material, of the increase in knowledge. When I began looking at Hebrew manuscripts about 25 years ago, I had like access to, on limited student budget, maybe 4 facsimile volumes, like the Golden Haggadah, Sarajevo Haggadah, a few others, right? Ashkenazi Haggadah, and I kind of thought, okay, that's what I have, plus some kind of picture books. You know, your coffee table books, you could turn over. I couldn't say, I want to see every image from this manuscript. I actually want to see how is it relevant to the particular context we're in. But now we have fantastic stuff. For instance, here, the Bodleian Library, Polonsky Foundation Digitalization Project. We can look at many thousands of pages, tens of thousands of pages. We do fantastic stuff like turn pages. We'll zoom in. You know about the stuff, right? We can even like say, okay, we can use IIIF and we're going to compare 2, 3, 4 different codices side by side. That's a little bit more exciting, right? I just wanted to sign this as a...
The Pentateuch Bible is the most lavishly illuminated Hebrew Bible to have survived for the living Spain. The exquisite manuscript was commissioned in La Coruña in northern Spain, was copied in 1476 by a renowned scribe, Moses Ibn Zabara, and illuminated with burnished gold and silver leaf by Joseph Ibn Chaim in its exceptional combined style of Islamic, Christian, and popular motifs. The Bible epitomizes indeed the intricate multicultural circumstances of the Jewish presence and creativity in Spain.
So we can give students access to digital images, we can make very nice detailed videos like that. As Martin persuaded me, the most important thing is to give students access to the actual manuscripts themselves, so they discover things. That's really important. We're very privileged. I'm privileged to teach them in the body and have access to these manuscripts and students them. I was at a conference recently, Dark Archives, and they said, you know, what's the most important thing from the point of view of paleography that a digital resource could do or a digital tool could see? And most of the audience said, automatic transcription of the text. I was like, what are you talking about? And they were like, no, automatic transcription of the text. This is Transcriber, so if anyone's used that, so it's a free tool. You can upload your manuscripts and it segments the line, if you can see that, and then you can begin to transcribe it in the kind of online free version. It doesn't actually have Hebrew, so I told it was Greek. But it managed to segment the lines very nicely, and then you can put your own transcription in. The way this is a learning tool, right? It's machine learning. So you put your transcriptions here. You can transcribe this. If you transcribe maybe 30, 40 pages, it then kind of learns how to do that automatically. You can do more stuff with a kind of script quite like that. That's quite fun. And that's great for students. I've sat lots of students down with tools like this and said, let's just go, let's just transcribe. What letters can you do? Let's do this in teams, let's do it in groups. You know, what can you actually transcribe? What can you see? Which letter forms can you get? And also you're contributing to the like the AI tool behind that that will allow to transcribe other things that look similar. This is another project, eScripta, eScriptorium. My colleague, Peter Stokes, slightly in the shadows. And again, it's just the same thing. It automatically segments the text. It will transcribe it for you. So I talked about printing press, kind of, what's happening. We've got many millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of medieval manuscripts available on the web. British Library, and then close to 500,000 images available in high resolution for free download, which is very exciting. It's nice to turn to the pages, but if I say, hey, I want to run a cool digital humanities project where it searches automatically for something important to me, like, I don't know, dragons, it can't do that with the turn of the page thing. I need to just fit a drop of data set in. So they made 500,000 images available. They download them for free in super high resolution. Very nice. I've been working with these guys, see the right here in Oxford, and they're developing technologies to automatically segment and identify things. That's the idea. So it'll take me quite a while to look at 500,000 images, let's say, even if I start there. And I might say, am I interested in dragons? So let's start with dragons. Can you find me 500, you know, go through this 500,000 images and tell me what looks like a dragon? Then I start to do my work, right? I might say, find something that looks like an aleph, or a gimel, or a shin. Find something that looks like a Yemenite ayin, right? I can start to do that. But first of all, like, give me the text, then I can do the work, right? I don't necessarily want to look through a million images or 15 million images because I don't have time. Right, so that's a shortcut to that, so we can do the work. Wow, I've got this text about dragons. That one we can all understand. Alright, so stage one, find the images. Here it finds something from the Golden Haggadah. I'm like, okay, fine, now segment it. Now see if you can give me those scenes. Maybe we can teach you to identify some of those scenes, so I can say, find me other images that look like a person lying down. Find me other images that look like they might be Joseph having a dream. And then we do the work, right? Then we do the real work. There's Jacob wrestling the angel. Nice. All right, so here's the birds of Haggadah. So I'm like, here's the page. Chuck it into the software. What can I do? It can say, oh, that's an image. That's not the text. Nice, huh? That's why we need computers to help us do these things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to do. Okay, so there it is. There's another image. There's another image. Oh, I'm on more. All right, let's see if we can identify the scene. So let's put the verse in, fine. We've got a nice clue there, Akedah, like the binding of Isaac. So the text itself has been captioned. That might help. Now works out, there's the RAM, what's that? Okay, let's do that. Right? And again, this is not the computer doing this for us. It's like saying, find these images and then I'll do some work. So I want to do something beyond this, right? Beyond finding them. Flip through here. Right, this is the project that I worked on that Rachel mentioned. Archetype. It's free, open source set of web-based tools that allow you to manually annotate images. You create your own vocabulary, you then manually draw boxes. So the computer is assisting you, it's computer assisted research, it's putting the researcher at the centre of the decision making process. Much in the way that you would do maybe a school of King's Lecture. Alright, so you can download it now. Alright, so you decide which letters or symbols or components and features each symbol has, you create your own vocabulary, you decide what to annotate, you draw your annotations by hand. It's a surprisingly kind of mellow process. I worked on this project DigiPal, looking at English vernacular middle school from the 11th century. Between us, we annotated 85,000 boxes, which is a nice start. I probably drawn about 100,000 boxes in the last few years. It's good. It's good, isn't it? It's what we want to do, right? That's why we have PhDs. Right, so here's the process. Manually draw a box around that aleph over there, and then you can start to say, is it compressed, dilated, elongated, short, slightly curved, straight? Does it have a spur? Is it thick? And you tick those, and then you can do some searches, which I'll show you in a second. So I decide what I want. From the drop down, I choose shin. I draw a box around the shin, hopefully. There you go. I now say save, that's a shin, and then I can start to describe it if I want to. With some of this vocabulary. Again, you create your own vocabulary. use morphology as an approach, and you use ductus. What's important, you should always use ductus. Okay, so here's Deborah Mattis's description top left of different parts of the aleph, what she might like for that. Again, if you come together as a team, most digital humanities projects are team-based. We might decide on the vocabulary, we all work together, become, you know, one person's ascender is another person's shaft, is another person's upstroke. We all end up using the same thing. You can visualize it and say, okay, if you come into our database, if you search for things and say, show me all this kind of stuff, show me lots of examples of aleph, which you can do, and then you can click on that, and it will go straight to the manuscript page in its context. It's very good for students. We've had a lot of students work on projects like this, where they come in, maybe they can't read Hebrew, but they can do a search and say, show me something that looks a bit like that, and they're like, wow, that's an aleph, that's great. Well, you can literally sit students down and they can learn to read some of these languages, or at least identify individual letter forms. Also with Archetype, we've got the facility to search for text as well, to search particular through the corpus. You say, I want to find all of the, I don't know, what is that? Okay. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Right? So let's say, let's show me all the things that begin with Bereshit Bara Elohim, and we'll go through the whole corpus and say, these are all the beginnings. So let's say, okay, nice, is it illuminated? What's happening? Is it big? Is it a word caption? You know, what's happening? What type of text is it? Is it a Torah scroll? Is it a codex? What's happening? Wow. Because this is manual annotation, you can also draw a box around anything you want. So you can say, okay, here, let's just draw around the person. Is the person facing left, facing right? Male, seated, what's going on? And we can do some searches and show us all the images of Pharaoh where they're seated, or show us all the faces, all the heads. Let's see people with beards, right? Let's see people with hats. Let's see living beings with heads. I'm quite proud of that vocabulary that I've created myself. Okay, so, well, let's see all the seated figures across the manuscript, in this case, the Golden Haggadah, right? And we can start to say, okay, iconographically, what do we see in terms of rhetoric, gesture, pose, like position within the thing? Can we finish with this in Rachel's honour? So she mentioned Twitter. I think it's important for everybody to have legacy, right? Now, not in a narcissistic way. It's just kind of good to think you contributed something to the universe, to the world. Okay, so this is my thing, hashtag Micrography Monday. You know what micrography it is? It's like teeny writing. Oops, it's disappeared. What is it on that? Did I not move around enough? One second, sorry. Alright, so teeny tiny Hebrew writing that makes such shapes. The journal being swallowed by a big fish. So that's the commentary on the main text. Look at that. All of this, we'll see some in a second, is little letter forms. Look at that. This is fun. I started tweeting images like this, and suddenly I found that I had friends in the universe. The Bodleian Library Hebrew Project started getting involved. The British Library Hebrew Project started getting involved. All sorts of other people started doing things. I could just sit back on a Monday and say, wow, teeny, teeny writing is coming to my desktop without me even doing it. Right, but it's very exciting. It means I've got to see material that I've never seen before. I've spoken to people and they're like, they're interested in this, right? It's kind of, because it's cool, right? It's kind of cool. And we want to ask questions now, like, how is this supposed to be used? Did you rotate the object? How could you see it? Like, is this a mnemonic? Like, is it just a memory aid? What is it? What's going on here? Nice. Plenty more fish in the sea. Judith, I'll show me Schlanger's hand there. Because we decided we would actually turn the pages of the manuscript on Monday, just so we could do that in some kind of meta way. Look at that. Let's call it a night. That's my scholarship.